You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel. Coming up this week in episode 238. It's a big year in both British and American politics. We'll try and figure out how the political landscape will look by the end of the year. After our disastrous attempts at forecasting the outcome of the Premiership football season, we have another go and make some terrible predictions for 2016 in sport. And what can we expect in music and the arts in the coming year? That's all coming up after the Chemical Brothers and Go!
See, we get to the end, but that's where we begin. You feel it? Mannequins, and we breaking the mold. Breaking out, and we breaking the codes. Similar to the jack who stole, to the depths in your wet, so you take explosive. So get it out, send your body to flight. Everybody got a target tonight. Everybody come along for the ride. All you studs and your duds and your ladies is fly. Grip the moment like you're gripping the earth. Feel a weight and you're feeling the girth. Now you get it, now you're feeling your worth. Fitness sound you used to make when everything used to hurt. It goes, oh! No time to rest. Just do your best. What you hear is not a test. We're only here to make you. We're only here to make you. We're only here to make you. We're only here to make you go.
Solo, gotta make it on time. Brightest star gonna be the guide. Gotta get you to the other side, to where the butterflies and where the peace resides. But first, 5 minutes for the 15 of fame. 5 seconds for you saying my name. I'm deadly sharp shooting the game. Gonna hit you in the soul, execution is aim. Get together and we building a fire. Clear smoke and it's taking us higher. Hands up, everyone is one. If you see yourself making it, you're seeing the sun. Metropolis on the edge of control. They take our money but they won't take our soul. Fuck that, ain't gonna do it no more. Won't do what we told and we ain't gonna fold. We go,
oh! No time to rest. Just do your best. What you hear is not a test. We're only here to make you. We're only here to make you. We're only here to make you. We're only here to make you go.
Can't think. Can't sleep. Can't breathe. Can't think, can't sleep, can't breathe.
Everybody jumping out of their mind. Everybody going out of their skins. Everybody jumping out of their mind. Everybody going out of their skins.
Splendid single from last year, The Chemical Brothers and Go, or as Rona introduced it, Go!
that is appropriate. It's very peppy, isn't it, that tune? And funnily enough, this was one of my picks for this week, and I have a bit of a story behind this, in that I first came across this earlier, I say earlier on this year, we're in a new year now, aren't we? That's the whole point. In 2015, I came across this. My then girlfriend at the time was around one evening, and it was just before Wimbledon was due to be on, and the BBC had a trailer that was very sort of fast and very fast cutting of lots of people welting balls and things like that. And there was this music over the top of it that had this throbbing do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And my then girlfriend was very, very keen on it and danced wildly to it as it came out of the TV around the front room and said, I've got to know what this is. Why don't you know what this is? You're meant to know what this is. And I said, well, I don't know. And I used SoundHound, I used Shazam, these kind of recognition softwares, and neither of them touched it. I even wrote to the BBC via email, who did not reply, wow. Can I just point Burns, out? I know, yeah. Boo, budget cuts and that, saying, what is this? I did what, you know, sort of John Peel used to complain that his listeners used to do, which is stop in the street and say, you played a track last year and it sounded a bit reggae and the bass line went thumpety thumpety thump. I kind of tried to describe this track whilst emailing it and I never found out what it was, and me and my girlfriend split up, and that was the end of the story, until in about October time. I often used to go on about 3 times a year, I go on CD buying binges where I buy about 4 or 5 CDs at once. And that keeps me up to date with what's going on in music. And I decided I'd buy the new Chemical Brothers album because I hadn't had it by that point. And I was just sort of pottering away at home playing the CD. And all of a sudden, the song came on from Wimbledon. And I went, oh, my God, this is that song. And it turns out that the reason that that it didn't come up on voice recognition software was it hadn't been released at that point. And it was the BBC had obviously got hold of it on a someone in some department had been sent it as a promo just before it was due to come out, and they'd obviously got hold of it and thought it was a good thing, and it was good music for this advert. It fitted in very well with the, you know, the kind of the speed of Wimbledon and the power of it. So yes, that's how I came to love that track, by not knowing what on earth it was for about 3 months, and then unexpectedly discovering it whilst I was washing up on a Monday afternoon.
Well, you also get extra points there for using my catchphrase, which is my then girlfriend.
As it would say on El Graves, yes.
Yes,
indeed.
That's right. Well, welcome to podcast 238. Back into the regular groove after a couple of weeks of special editions.
And eating mostly on my part. In the absence of doing podcasts, I was basically just eating everything. So the end of the podcast will feature me being winched out of this chair on a crane, I think.
I'm Terence Dackham, and well, look, it is Juliet Harris.
Could it be? Yes, hello. I got some new pyjamas for Christmas, so I'm wearing them instead of my onesie at the moment.
Oh, instead of your onesie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What a picture you paint.
Yes, indeed. I know. What a pin-up, brackets, cough. Anyway, let's carry on.
Not at all. I saw a photo of you that you put up on Facebook yesterday in which you just looked amazing.
Well, that's very nice.
Very,
thank you.
Very photogenic woman.
Well, not really, but anyway, it had some of my face in it, so what more could we ask for, I guess?
Jules, with my laser-like accuracy in predicting world and sporting events...
Yes, indeed, we will come to talk about just how massively accurate we were in 2015 and how in no way do people tweet us every week to tease us for how terrible we are as sages. We're not... Well, I was going to say we're not exactly Nostradamus, but then Nostradamus did predict the end of the world and it didn't happen. So maybe we are Nostradamus.
Oh, maybe. It's now 8 months since I firmly predicted a Labour-Liberal coalition.
Yes, indeed.
As the outcome of the 2015 general election. So with that extraordinary inaccuracy in mind, I kind of figured it would be safer to give you...
Oh, great. Thanks for that.
I'll give you a clear run on trying to establish the political landscape as we turn into 2016. We have the weirdness of the Corbyn regime, a rather smug Conservative Party at the moment, invisible Liberal Democrats, one UKIP MP, lots of Scottish nationalists, and the rather admirable Caroline Lucas. What's going to happen in 2016, Jules?
Well, your guess is literally as good as mine, frankly. And I think that one thing that I have been struck by, and lots of my quote-unquote political friends have been struck by, is how we thought that we could predict things. We thought that we had an understanding of how things were and how things worked. And, you know, who could have predicted this? Who could have predicted that we would have got here? And by here, I mean, well, you know, we could talk for the next 3 hours about Labour and their problems and how to sort those out. I mean, headline points, it's clear Corbyn isn't going anywhere, regardless of whether or not you think Corbyn should go anywhere. He's not going anywhere because, A, him and his advisors are starting to build a power base in the various parts of the Labour Party where he needs it. So on the National Executive Committee, which is very finely balanced between sort of hard, quote unquote, hard left and, you know, quote unquote, moderates at the moment. That's kind of what's going on there. He's gradually started to get more people in the whip's office. There's a whip's vacancy at the moment. The reshuffle resulted in there being a spare whip vacancy. So it'd be interesting to see who gets put on. Funnily enough, my view from inside the whip's office, because I have an insider there, is that actually, funnily enough, that is a peculiarly united place of the party at the moment, despite the fact there are Corbynites and others in that. I mean, I think the Corbynites are careful what they say, but I think that seems to be quite a, everyone seems to like each other, which in a way, in an increasingly uncertain world for Labour, at least the office responsible for enforcing party discipline get on within themselves. That is a brief shard of light if you're a Labour supporter, I think. But I mean, I can't see Corbyn going anywhere simply because, you know, he has such a power base amongst the membership. The Labour Party membership, I think, is the key to why they are in the place they are and why, you know, it's not necessarily an indicator of electoral success, because the Labour membership that I saw some stats the other day is becoming increasingly, to use our old fashioned class system, it's increasingly A's and B's rather than the C1s and the C2s and the D's and the E's. It's A, meant to be representing, and B, are the votes that it really, really needs that it lost out on last time, and that's why we lost in 2015. I think there's a real danger that Labour is becoming a London party. I think that's, you know, there were criticisms of Miliband's sort of regime for that, but I think it's worse than ever. Someone pointed out the other day, there are now twice as many MPs from Islington in the shadow cabinet as there are from the entire northeast.
Which... What about the other parties, though? I mean, we know you're sort of very much, you know, you make no secret that you're a Labour supporter.
Yes, there are other parties now, and I will talk about them as well, I promise. Well, sorry, to summarise for Labour, Labour in 2016, will get pasted in the local council elections in May. I mean, there is no doubt about that. There will be huge losses. All of the by-elections so far, council by-elections, suggest that will be the case in anywhere that isn't London. But I think Sadiq Khan will win the Mayor of London in 2016. I think Goldsmith is slightly overrated, and I think Sadiq will win, and that will mean that Corbyn is safe for the moment. So I think that's, having said that, the thing that will be key for Labour and the Tories in 2016 is whether or not we have this in-out referendum, and of course that will be important for UKIP as well. The only way I can see Corbyn going in 2016 is if, because there is a big Labour in campaign, would be if the referendum is quote unquote lost for Labour and Europe is left, I then think that some of the moderates like Chucker and Emma Reynolds and all of that gang will then move, I think. So that will be my prediction. At the moment, the polling suggests that Leave is comfortably ahead. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there. That's the only potential banana skin for the Tories in 2016 as well. I mean, they may think that they've got, you know, a dream leader in Jeremy Corbyn. In a way, they have. And that, you know, there are some fairly, you know, big things happening with the Conservatives at the moment. The fact that Cameron, having previously said he would not give a free vote, that he would whip. He has now completely U-turned on that, and as a result of which, in ordinary circumstances, looks very weak and would be made to look very weak, but everyone's looking at the Labour reshuffle instead. And that's where this is all so frustrating, because the Tories are not being held to account. And of course, the longer they're not held to the account, the more smug and complacent they become, and the more danger there is that there will be issues. I think that the potential issues of the Tory are the European referendum and how to handle that, because Cameron clearly wants to stay in, but large parts of his party don't. So how will they deal with that, to a backdrop of the fact that Cameron, as far as we know, is still not standing in 2020 to be prime minister? So, you know, will we see some sort of discord as people start to jockey for position? I still think we'll see a kind of a Boris resurgence, and you know, what, you know, how's George Osborne going to deal with that? Will Theresa May manage to claw back some credibility after her terrible conference speech? What will go on with then? I think that there are still... It's not all going to be plain sailing for the Tories. Liberal Democrats, who knows when we'll see their like again. And frankly, I think part of the problem for me is, as well as having 8 MPs and I think potentially having lost trust for a generation in what they did, I'm not sold on Tim Farron as a new leader. I don't think he comes across very well at all. So I can't see him being able to build a consensus. Regardless of Labour's travails, I can't see them building a consensus. And a consensus. And again, with UKIP as well, I think ditching Farage was a great idea for UKIP. And unfortunately, not because I don't like him, but I think that he has become such a specialist taste. I mean, he is so ridiculous that weirdly now UKIP are starting to Labour's big mistake was that they completely underestimated until it was far too late the appeal of UKIP in the north, in northern once working constituencies that now aren't. And they thought that UKIP were just a minority interest for, you know, tweedy Tories that, you know, wanted to leave Europe. And ironically, under Farage, that is now what they are becoming again, I think. I think they're still a threat up north, but the Oldham by-election proved that actually there were, you know, peculiar circumstances to that. But equally, you know, they weren't this huge surging threat that we thought they might be. And, you know, Farage is increasingly ridiculous, increasingly paranoid in the things that he says. And actually, you know, hilariously, there might be a power struggle in a party which only has one MP. And to tie the Greens into that. And I love the fact that, you know, you've got Carswell and Farage falling out. You know, they've got one MP, and they and them and the leaders don't get, you know, how is there a revolt in a party with one MP? But the Greens meanwhile seem to be doing a better job of managing to have this peculiar situation where you've got a leader and an MP and they're different people, and they seem to be doing a better job of that. Much to admire about Caroline Lucas in a lot of ways. There's talk of a Labour Green pact in places. But to be honest, I think that's rather overrated, simply because there was only one seat in 2015 where you could genuinely argue that the Greens cost Labour the seat. Of all of the seats in Britain, there was only one seat where that was the case, and that was Brighton Kemp Town, where the Greens and Labour split the vote and the Tory got in. And that's the only place that that's happened. So in terms of whether or not it's a good idea for the Labour and Greens to have a pact, I think, you know, I've met many, many people that have joined the Labour Party this year from the Greens. And actually, I think the Greens are the party that are the most hurt by Labour's move to the left, because they've taken a lot of their natural people have come back to Labour from the Greens. I don't know. There seems to be something that stops the Greens from breaking through as an electoral force. And in a way, perhaps the fact that they've been so damaged by Labour's relative move to the left shows that, you know, maybe there's a limit to their appeal. And I, you know, and we were told there wasn't by various people on the left in 2015, but maybe there is. So
some might say they've got an excellent MP and a very poor leader.
Well,
but,
I'm not convinced by it. Not convinced by it by Natalie Bennett very much. She seems very nice, but Caroline Lucas for me is far more convincing, and I can see why they took the decision. They actively took a decision that they wanted two different people so that they could build two profiles in public, and that was admirable. But
it hasn't worked. No. Some commentators say that the local elections in the UK, May the 5th, yes, 2016, will be pivotal. But I'm not so sure. I think if the Conservatives lose seats, then it will be just attributed to midterm blues. You know, that's pretty standard halfway through a government. Then they lose by elections. They don't do well in local elections. If Labour are obliterated, then there will be a sizable number of Labour supporters who will say that the party just isn't left-wing enough.
Well, or it's the fault of the PLP and the press. That's the thing that you're hearing a lot at the moment. Whereas actually, yes, I don't think some of the interventions were particularly helpful or grown up from people that were leaving the shadow cabinet this week. But having said that, the thing that will really do for Corbyn in the end is the fact that his top team seem to be completely incapable of running the media / running news cycles. That doesn't seem to be a thing that they're able to do at all. And actually,
they're very media naive.
The idea that they this is where a lot of my Labour friends were so offended by the shadow cabinet reshuffle. The fact that Labour launched a huge campaign to do with train fares, that was a big ground campaign that started on Monday, I think, Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And as a result of which loads of activists and staffers that I know all got up at ridiculous times in the morning, sort of 4, 4:30 to go to train stations, tube stations. A lot of it was tied around Sadiq Khan's campaign in London. So there were people everywhere going to stations, and it got no coverage at all because of the reshuffle, which Corbyn's team were in control of. There was no grid or anything at all. There was no news management done there. And you know, you just feel like saying, yes, well, you're meant to be relying on your membership, aren't you? Because now, you know, we can see Corbyn circumventing the PLP increasingly and, you know, getting the membership to legitimise him. But you feel like saying, well, that's not a great way. That's not even a great way to keep your membership on board, because I'd be pretty peed off even if I was a Corbyn supporter. I've got out at 4:30 to deliver leaflets to train commuters, only to have everyone talking about the shadow cabinet reshuffle instead, which, by the way, took 3 days to move about 7 people. And you know, we'll see. A trident is the other big headline issue for Labour, but we'll see where that one goes. But yeah, well, to use the overworn phrase at the moment, interesting times.
Let's move across the Atlantic. We know that we have, from feedback and stats, we know that we have a sizable number of listeners each week from America.
Hello, the States.
As we record this podcast, we're less than 10 months away from the United States presidential election, although the campaigning started about 3 years ago. It always seems as soon as one president is elected, the campaigning starts for the 4 years ahead. But the media managed to keep the interest alive, I think, by staging the election, particularly this 2016 election, as a series of events like Dancing with the Stars or the Super Bowl. You know, sort of tune in for the Democrats' debate. You know, halftime entertainment from Coldplay. You almost half expect to hear. It's increasingly hard to call the winners of the Republican and Democrat nominations because of the polls, which I'll come to in a moment, but because these days, and particularly in American politics, one misplaced sort of utterance or word or one scandal can ruin any campaign. And in the most recent poll conducted for NBC in America, the three leading Democrats polled were Martin O'Malley, who's on 2%. This is the top three. Then Bernie Sanders, 36%. Hillary Clinton, 53%. So despite some peculiarities in relation to her emails and whether or not she came under hostile fire in Bosnia, Hillary does look unbeatable as the Democrats' nominee. But, you know, who will she face in the presidential election? The latest, that NBC polling for the Republicans gives 13% for Marco Rubio, 18% for Ted Cruz, and 35% for Donald Trump.
Where's Carson on that?
It completely dropped away after the debates. He performed so badly in the debates. He's down, way down in low single figures in the percentages
and again,
now.
And to tie in with our superstar stellar predictions, I think I predicted good things for Ben Carson previously on the programme. So, yeah,
me too. I really thought that he was a sort of ideal candidate in the, you know, ethnic minority.
Well,
and
I thought the Republican right might have a problem with that. But that aside, I thought that, you know, certainly the more metropolitan Republicans probably would have welcomed that, I think.
But he has got really extreme right-wing views on particularly capital punishment and immigration and so on. And, you know, with such a huge number of American voters coming from particularly from the Hispanic communities, that's why still many journalists and commentators in the US still insist that Trump, despite that lead, has no chance and his support will collapse. I don't see any sign of that yet, though.
No, I don't. I find it difficult to avoid the conclusion that it will be Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. I don't see at the moment how it could be anything other than that. I mean, like you say, there are the only thing really that has potentially damaged Clinton is this emails thing. So, to be honest, I'm not entirely convinced how many people really care about that. I think it's, you know, I can see it being her for the Democrats. And, you know, Clinton versus Trump, in a sane and sensible world, surely it would be Hillary Clinton. But, sure, you know, as we are proving, you know, today and generally, we can't predict it. We live in a more unpredictable world than ever, I think. I mean, who would have predicted this time last year it was still largely accepted or thought that Ed Miliband was probably going to be prime minister? You know, what's happened there? And again, you know, there's lots of there's lots of talk about this. The Simpsons are often accused of accidentally predicting the future. And they showed there's a thing going around the internet at the moment, which is they, as a joke, portrayed Donald Trump standing for the presidential election in 2000. And the idea was it was a joke that was so outrageous because it was so unlikely that was ever going to happen and that people would take it seriously. And look where we are.
I think we've kind of mentioned before about how the media and our perception of American life coming through American reports on the media over here in Europe. Mm. We, of course, naturally tend to see the world through New York, Los Angeles,
yes,
Chicago.
We do, yeah.
But of course, in Ohio and Montana and North Dakota, there are huge numbers of people who want to own guns,
yes,
who believe they need to protect their property from all these people coming from the Middle East, coming in to take over their country. And, you know, that's where Trump is getting all his support from. And, you know, that they can't be discounted. The American election won't be decided by the media elite in Manhattan.
No,
or Santa
and,
Monica.
And indeed, there are parallels over here as well, I think. People, you know, we view things through a London, particularly if you, like me, read lots of political commentary in the press, in the national press. We view a lot of things through London eyes, don't we? And we don't necessarily view things through eyes of people living in the Northwest, Northeast, Midlands. And actually, you know, to tie back to Labour, you know, Labour needs to be aware of that. You know, the world is not London. Britain is not London. And equally, we need to be aware that New York and Manhattan are not America.
That's not America. The US primaries run from February to June, so we should know the two candidates by June at the very latest, though it's often clearer long before.
I was going to say, late April, well, probably the time that the local elections are going on around here, you would probably expect to know before that point, I think.
This next track is from 1976, but lyrically could easily summarise the coming months of the US election.
Crazy, sick is losing her daughter.
Mark Volman and Howard Kalin, formerly of the Turtles and the Mothers of Invention, in their guise as Flo and Eddie from the album Moving Targets, and that was Keep It Warm.
That's an apt choice to describe those events. Maybe we should... this is a bit like being on Heartbeat, isn't it? In the 90s ITV detective programme that had the world's most literal soundtrack. Maybe, yes. But you'd see a police car chase and you knew that instantly they would play Crosstown Traffic by Jimi Hendrix, and they did. So maybe we need to start this Heartbeat-esque, overly literal soundtrack. So I don't know, maybe at the end we'll talk about how listeners can feed back to this. We could see if there is a demand for that, or I suspect not.
I love the idea of that. Jules, I think we need to revise some of our football predictions that we made.
Yes, people have pointed this out on social media, haven't they?
Well, once again, with a great degree of certainty, I said that Claudio Ranieri would be the first managerial sacking of the season, which, of course, was hopelessly wrong. But who would ever have predicted that Claudio would be in the running for Manager of the Year whilst Jose Mourinho was unemployed by Christmas? Who ever would have? I want to know what you've made of the season so far, and also, of course, you'll be predicting, I'm sure, that England will win the Football European Championships in the summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's obviously beyond doubt.
But taking us right.
Hasn't it been an interesting season in the Premier League? Really, like you say, who could have predicted? Well, not just the rise of Leicester, although that is the big story, isn't it? The rise of Leicester, Jamie Vardy, Mahrez, and indeed the manager that you predicted would be the first to be sacked, Claudio Ranieri. I don't think they'll win I'd love it if they won the Premiership. That would be such a story. But there's talk of Vardy having minor surgery. We're now into sort of January time. I've horrible feeling they might start to run out of steam. But having said that, they've got the magic 40 points that usually keeps you at least safe in the Premiership, unlike your relegation threatened Chelsea. And also not just Leicester. I mean, looking at the table now, who would have predicted? I mean, if you look at the bottom of the table. The bottom three are Aston Villa, Sunderland and Newcastle, which I think was pretty predictable, actually. And then you've got Swansea, Bournemouth and Norwich hovering just above that. So that takes care of 15 to 20. And again, most of that, I think, is pretty predictable. Relegation threatened Chelsea at 14. Southampton, who seem to have fallen away a little bit at 30. And then you've got the perennial mid-table teams of West Brom, Everton and Stoke. Watford are another big success story, I think, this season. I think it had Leicester not been doing what they were doing. Everybody would be talking about Watford much more than they are. So Watford are another team that have done pretty well. Liverpool in eighth, it sums up their season, really, you know, again in a transitional time. Then if you look in the top seven teams, you've got Crystal Palace, West Ham and Leicester in that top seven. And I don't think anybody, not just Leicester, I don't think anybody would have predicted, you know, Alan Pardew doing great things at Crystal Palace. You know, West Ham seem to have suddenly got themselves together and sorted themselves out. Just goes to show, I think, how long it takes to deal with problems in dressing rooms, because I'm sure that many of West Ham's problems over the years have been due to various toxic presences in their dressing room. So it'd be interesting that that's taken as long to work through. In the top four at the moment, Arsenal, Leicester, Man City and Tottenham. Arsenal and Man City predicted, I think, by both of us, Leicester and Tottenham less so, although Tottenham are always one of those teams that I think have great potential to be there or thereabouts. And then Manchester United in fifth. Again, how can we predict, you know, what will happen with Louis van der Gaal? I thought he was gone the other week and he seems to be sticking around. I think if Manchester United lose to Sheffield United in the FA Cup this weekend, I think that will be the next potential massive problem. I have put 20p on Sheffield United to win, by the way, just as a bit of fun. So I will share my £1.80 winnings with you next week. So that's, you know, what will happen with the Premiership. I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal won now. I think that Arsenal seem to be the team that have the momentum. They seem to have a good setup there. I think Arsene's got it all under control. Man City, I think, still have the potential this season. They don't have the consistency. They're still looking like they'll slop about a bit, I think. Who knows if Chelsea will get it together or not? It might be that Chelsea, if you ended up in top six now, that would be a really good result for you, I think. Manchester United, my prediction was that I thought they'd find something in them to win. That seems, like all of our predictions, very misguided now. But, we'll see what happens there. I think if Manchester United changed their manager like Liverpool did, they might get a shot in the arm, but I don't know. I mean, given our lack of success earlier on this season, I almost don't want to make any solid predictions. But at the moment, it looks like Arsenal will be the ones. But then, having said that, like politics, it all changes very quickly, doesn't it? So, as far as Europe, there are some Europes happening this summer, aren't there? The European Championships.
Absolutely.
Well,
I'm just waiting for you to say, well, of course, you know, you're expecting England to stroll through to the final where they inevitably triumph over Germany.
Well, that is the prediction, isn't it? Well, looking at England's group, if we start from the beginning, because history has taught us a very good place to start. England's group have England, Russia, Wales and Slovakia, which is not a straightforward group. But if you can't get out of a group with those teams in it, then I don't
think most of the third place teams are going through. Sorry to interrupt, but it's not just the top two. This is the thing. It's almost impossible not to qualify.
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? England Wales would be an interesting one. I mean, in a way, I'm sorry that England and Wales are in the same group because I would have liked to sort of cheer on Wales as well, really. But you'd think that England would get out of that group with reasonable ease. And if they can't, then I don't have any great hopes. Group A: France, Romania, Albania, and Switzerland. It'd be interesting to see, just in a general sense, most European championships particularly always have an unexpected, or World Cups have an unexpected success story, don't they? So Greece in 2004, Costa Rica was sort of unexpected at the last World Cup. Switzerland are always one of those teams for me that have the potential to spring a bit of a surprise, but they don't have great pedigree in the Euro Championships. According to this, they finished bottom of their group in all three previous appearances. So it would have to be quite something. Romania might be one of those teams that I think grinds themselves out to, that they will grind to a semi-final. They qualified in a fairly dour and laborious way, so I think they might end up doing the same thing. Group C, we've got, fabled Germany, we've got Ukraine, we've got Poland, and we've got Northern Ireland. Poor old Northern Ireland. I don't think they've got a hope in hell in that group, personally, but stranger things have happened. It's still hard to see past Germany in terms of predictions for winning. I mean, Group D has Spain. Group D is probably the group of death, I think, ironically, because that contains Spain, Turkey, Croatia, and Czech Republic. So I think that could be potentially the most interesting group. And I will go out on a limb and say that I think that I don't know how the draw entirely works, but I could see if the draw falls in favour, I think one of the finalists that isn't Germany could potentially come from that group if the draw works in that favour, I think. Okay. That feels right. Group E, if anyone's going to spring a surprise, plucky Belgium. Belgium have been talked about for ages, haven't they? It's having all of these sort of Premiership players in, and they never seem to quite... Well, they've got their Premier League players at the moment are Toby Anderweireld, Chadli and Vertonghen from Tottenham, Courtois and Hazard from your Chelsea, De Bruyne and company, Fellaini, Lukaku, Benteke, Mingele and
it's not bad, is it?
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? I mean, I wonder if they might turn into a Holland and that they might always have great potential yet somehow underachieve. But I'd watch Belgium because if Belgium can get out of the group they're in, because they've got Italy, the Republic of Ireland and Sweden. So if they can get out of that group, which is quite a big ask, I think. But then again, Sweden are one of those teams that seem to be going backwards rather than forwards. They've got an experienced team, but they don't really have any spark there. Ireland, I think, Ireland could go either way. They'll either do really badly or they'll do brilliantly. And Italy, I think, are still a potential up their team. Group F is a bit of a random group. The Portugal will win this group easily because the other teams are the footballing giants that are Iceland, Austria and Hungary. So I don't think our finalist is going to come from Group F. But given what the Premiership has taught us so far this season, it'll probably be Iceland, won't it? Because, it's all been so weird. But it's still hard to see part of the big European teams, the old school teams in terms of Spain, possibly Portugal, Germany, Italy, and maybe surprise packages like Belgium. I just can't see England doing anything, really, just because I've lived through so many tournaments where England have done nothing.
50 years of hurt.
The last real success for England was Euro 96, and apart from that, and some success at France 98, I suppose, and apart from that, I really can't see them Well, who knows? Maybe they'll spring a surprise. Maybe they'll have a young team that'll manage to spring a surprise package. But other than that, you know, I think my real tip for Euro 2016 is Germany, and my fun tip is Belgium.
I think I can't disagree with you. I can't see past Germany. It's always Germany.
Which is you know, dispiriting in a way. And actually, I think a lot of people have said to me that the Premier League has been the most entertaining it's been in years because of Leicester springing such a surprise. Mm. And in a way, it would be really fun if someone like that, I mean...
Iceland. Let's.
Yeah. Iceland would be the Leicester equivalent, wouldn't they?
I'm going to pray for Iceland as my Leicester of the Euros. But yeah, I think Germany.
And the biggest absentee, of course, from Euro 2016 is Holland.
Mm?
I can't believe we're watching a major tournament without Holland in it. Holland have always been my second team, and they've always seemed to sort of conspire to do themselves in. My recommendation of the week, by the way, I often do this, is a book. I can't remember who wrote it, but it's a book about the not just Dutch football, but the psyche of Dutch football and Dutch culture, and it's called Brilliant Orange. It was published about 20 years ago, I think. It's worth digging out. You can find it fairly easily sort of on in bargain bins online on various places, the site is like a river, and indeed other places as well you can find it. and it's worth a read because it's really, really, really interesting and has that sort of insight as to why every major tournament in my living memory has featured some massive fallout between the Dutch and you know, that's where they find themselves here. So more lessons for the Labour Party, I feel. Do you fall out all the time, you won't be in the major tournament. You'll be in it to win it.
Of course, it's an Olympic year, and it's really hard to fathom that it's a full 4 years since London 2012.
Where's that gone? How's that happened?
I still have a daydream that Rio say, look, we've had a good go, but we just won't be ready. London, would you step in?
Oh,
it would be just lovely to have that again. But the Olympics never fail to throw up big stories. And with the football Euros that we were just talking about, it's very possible that other sports might get squeezed out of the picture this summer. Wimbledon, I think we tend to forget over here, it only really matters to the Brits. Most tennis pros tend to see it, oh, it's just another stop on the circuit.
Even though it is a Grand Slam, to be fair. It's one of the four.
It is a Grand Slam, but we tend to see it as one of the great sporting events of the year. But I do think that most tennis pros just say, well, it's another Grand Slam, and it's one they don't like because it's on grass. Yes, there's a tendency to see cricketing summers that don't feature the Australians as somehow a little lacking.
Yes.
And we've got three tests against Sri Lanka, a further four against Pakistan.
Are they over
but
here?
I suppose. Yeah. All here in the summer. So seven tests in the summer against Sri Lanka and Pakistan. And of course, with such large and passionate Sri Lankan and Pakistani communities in this country, they could actually turn out to be quite lively affairs. But in terms of horse racing, which is one of my passions in life, it was announced this week that ITV are taking over television coverage of all domestic horse racing from Channel 4.
I am fairly distraught about this, it has to be said.
Well, I am too, because initially we might say, well, that's attractive because it'll bring racing to a wider audience, until we look at the small print and see that all but 34 race days will be relegated to the rather obscure track of ITV4.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And that will almost certainly, you know, consign horse racing to yet a further drop away from the public.
I am disappointed to hear that. The only thing that would save it for me, and I think I saw the story, and I don't think they've decided yet who the presenters will be, but I hope it doesn't result in the loss of Claire Balding, because I have some interest. My father, like you, is very, very, very into horse racing, so I have a bit of kind of background to it. And it's just so frustrating. Channel 4 having got Claire Balding back doing horse racing, which I think is still one of the things that she does best. I think she's really good as a presenter. It would be frustrating if then, you know, the horse racing, if you pardon the pun, trotted off to ITV4 and Claire Balding did not follow. That would be, I know that she's very busy doing her show for BT Sport, and that's on BBC Two sometimes now as well. And I know that she's not a lady who lacks commitments, but it would be sad if she then became sort of divorced from horse racing, because I think she's one of its true stars.
Yes, and the presentation aspect of horse racing, it can't be emphasised enough, is just so key to its success.
And I've got horrible visions of ITV4 putting up Ollie Murs, but, anybody like that.
Jeremy Kyle, yes,
Holly Willoughby, or people that just present rather than yes. like you say, it's so key, isn't it? The idea of having expertise and the fact that Claire Balding can stop anyone on a horse racing course and interview them because she's Claire Balding and everyone knows who she is.
Well, that's right. I mean, she comes from her father is a horse racing trainer, her uncle is a trainer, her brother is a trainer. And so she's been steeped in the sport since she was born, and therefore she knows everybody. And one of the great advantages for Claire Balding is that she can walk into the parade ring and every trainer, every jockey, every owner will speak to her, mainly because they've known her since she was 2 years old.
Yeah.
And so, there's an element of great sort of mutual respect and admiration there, which, as you say, would be completely lost if Caroline Flack was presenting it. We're back with Juliet's Guide to Which Artists and Bands We Should Look Out For after this from The Beach.
I take what I can get. You were the only part of me that I could ever like. And all you take from me is time that I misplaced inside the dark, the stormy sea. The burning tears that sang with all I gave to you. When your feelings meet the thief. If I could read it through, I'd take my time, my own sweet mind, and post it back to you. You are, you are, you are his soul, his fire, his own desire that's burning through. And the burning tears that take.
Yeah.
I really like that song, and I really like the style of George Morgan performing there as The Beach. And that was a single from this time last year, Thieves.
Mm, so I like that a lot. I wasn't familiar with it until you picked it, and I liked it very much indeed.
Now, Jules, you're young.
Well, allegedly, yes.
And you listen to what you young people called that sort of pop music.
Well, the wonkily pop music, I think, in my case.
Who should we listen out for and perhaps expect good things from in 2016?
Well, I mean, so you say that I'm young and listen to new things. Actually, depressingly, lots of my things I'm looking forward to in 2016 are albums from existing bands already. Having said that, the winner of the BBC's Sound of 2016 is a chap called Jack Garrett. I heard his stuff. I mean, to be fair, Radio 1 have been sort of pumping him, but the BBC have been pumping him from the very beginning. Some of his first tracks were uploaded to BBC Introducing, this new bands thing they do. So obviously people will get behind him in a big way. He seems to be a sort of continuation from James Bay, who was one of last year's tipped things. Was it someone on the Guardian website said, you know, more good news for fans of intense young men in hats. So I think, you know, that trend will not die down, I don't think. In terms of what I'm really looking for, inevitably, lots of the music I'm looking forward to in 2016 is largely woman focused. So of course, the return of my beloved PJ Harvey, very, very much looking forward to her new album, which is due in the spring. There's been an album trailer for that that's about 30 seconds long, which I've in no way, shape or form watched about 90 times. That's not a thing that's happened. A newish band, their debut album is out. I think it's out on February. It came out yesterday, I think, at the time of recording. It's a Spanish band, an all-girl band called Hines. They were originally called Deers, and I was playing a tune of theirs a year or two ago when they were Deers, and they were sued by another band, I think, as a result of which they are now the slightly more gender-specific Hines instead of Deers. And their debut album is out, and if you like, it's called Leave Me Alone, and if you like your kind of garage rock, lo-fi sort of thing, but with kind of pop sensibilities, that's worth looking out for. Suede have a new album out. Lots of the Britpop survivors are coming back. Suede have a new album out. I'm really looking forward to going and seeing Savages, again, another all-female kind of quite loud band. I tried to describe them to someone the other day, and I was resorted to saying a Joy Division but with girls is basically what Savages sound a bit like. They've got a new album out and they're touring. Shearwater have a new album out. Tindersticks have a new album out as well. There are lots of kind of Block Party are coming back, lots of those sort of cheering breaks, lots of kind of indie survivors that are coming back with new music. Of course, the Dame himself, David Bowie's new album is out now as well. I have listened to some of that and it is excellent, so I think people will get very excited about that. But of course, the two big returns that we're all the most excited about, the return of Cooler Shaker. I'm sure there'll be millions of people queuing up around the country for that. And also the return of the beloved Ronan Keating. It will be very nice to have him back, I'm sure. That will be lovely. And
you tease us, Jules.
I do. Loads of them. Celine Dion, she's got a new album out, apparently. That'll be, and Bon Jovi as well. So something for everyone, cough. The return of 50 Cent is alleged, apparently, and Afro-Celt Sound System. Lots and lots of people trying to try. Gorillaz are returning in 2016, apparently, and I'm very much looking forward to that. It'll be interesting to see. Damon Albarn's projects are always interesting to me because they're always so different. Be interesting to see him. He's done this Wonderland thing recently, hasn't he? This Alice in Wonderland thing. That's got very, very mixed reviews from people I know that have been to see it. There's been a sort of a wild variation of what people have thought of that. Be interesting to see whenever Damon Albarn sort of comes back. His career seems to be a series of comebacks, doesn't it, really, without ever going away. It's always exciting to get a new album from Damon Albarn, and I'm always interested to see where Damon Albarn is at any given point. So I'm apart from beloved PJH, I think I'm very much looking forward to seeing where Damon Albarn is with the Gorillaz.
In terms of the way we listen to music, the growth of streaming services goes on apace, and this streaming was given a massive boost when the Beatles finally turned up on Spotify and the other streaming services on Christmas Eve. Now, I'm a big fan of Spotify, mainly for the convenience of having almost every artist and every song ever recorded just a click away, and especially in the car, Jules. I can't even, it's strange, I can't even imagine a time already, although, you know, we've only Spotify 5 or 6 years, when I couldn't access everything at one click. One of the perhaps unexpected successes of 2015 was the rather quiet rollout of the Spotify Discovery Weekly feature.
I think we've spoken of this before. It's great. I think it's such a good thing.
I love it. Each Monday, Spotify's software manages to identify with remarkable accuracy, in my case, I must say, a playlist individual to each user, mixing up some old favourite songs with usually a delightful set of songs that the software seems to know that we'll enjoy. Now, I think that curating, that term that is rather a cliche already in terms of pulling together a group of songs, has turned a new corner with this service. Although it can be argued that someone like yourself curating music for listeners is exactly what you do each week on your radio
shows. I suppose, really. I mean, and actually my 2016 resolution in that respect... and again, it's just been borne out, I think, by my things I'm looking forward to in 2016. I was bought the David Cavanagh's John Peel book for Christmas. And again, another recommendation. It's excellent. And what it made me realise was that actually, in terms of discovering new music, I'm really not very good at it. And doing a music show, I should be much better at it than I am. And it's because we don't have people like John Peel anymore. Six Music is still pretty good, I must admit. But I sort of tip for 2016 to myself is to get better at trying to discover new music, and that I think that will be a trope. I will try and incorporate that into our tracks each week and see if I can dig up things in 2016. And like you say, the curation things, the idea of who watches the watches, who regulates the regulates, who curates for the curators. This is my question in 2016. I need someone to curate for me so I can curate for other people.
Well, that would be my problem because, as we talked about relatively recently, I think just before Christmas, the sheer volume of music being released each week means, you know, that's why I welcome curation from people or software, indeed, that I can trust, because otherwise it's just a big blur of ones and zeros that goes past me without ever stopping for more than a second. We're talking about you on the radio. You're on the radio this week?
I am, yes. I'm doing Indie Wonderland this week. So this week is the... And I'm actually doing Saturday Social, I think, as well. The Saturday afterwards. Not tonight, but next Saturday. So it's possible we have another podcast before that. But yes, I'm definitely doing Indie Wonderland on Wednesday. Again, there's lots of looking forward in the show at the moment because, of course, we're looking forward to all the new albums coming out. And indeed, the Bowie stuff's now out. The Hein stuff is now out. The Suede stuff will be out shortly. So yeah, lots of favourites, old and new at the moment. So, yes, Barricade Radio, barricaderadio.com, 8 to 10 p.m. on Wednesday evening.
You can contact us. The best way is to do so through Twitter. It's the easiest way to do so. Super Jules 84.
Yeah, still me, unfortunately.
And Sir Terence for me. Hooray! Thanks to Rona on her island. And, thanks to you for listening. We're back next week, but we're playing out with some very noisy girls.
Well, yes, indeed. And they're some of the noisy girls that I brought up earlier on, actually. And I thought, having opened the show with the one of the songs I enjoyed the most from 2015, which was Go by the Chemical Brothers, I thought we'd finish with something I'm really looking forward to in 2016. Savage's album Adore Life is due out later this month, I think. I'm going to see them in Bexhill towards the end of January. So if you're going to see Savage's at Bexhill, do come and wave. Really looking forward to this. Like you said, say those noisy girls, I saw them in 2013, I think, and they were at Camden Electric Ballroom when they were sort of beginning to bring out their first album. They were excellent live. In fact, if anything, they make even more sense live than they do on record. Very intense lead singer who's got a French background, who looks a bit like Ian Curtis, weirdly. She has that kind of hairdo. And they have that same intensity about them live. They are great, I think. This is from their upcoming album Adore Life. This is Savages, and this is The Answer.
If you don't love me, don't love anybody. If you don't love me, don't love anybody. And you're glad it's you, and you're glad it's you, and you're glad it's you, and you're glad it's you. Oh, there are things I know we should better not do, but I know you could sleep with me, we'll still be friends. Oh, I know I'll go insane. I'll go insane.
You have been listening to a DACA Media production.